Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of our discussion of the safeties in the 2020. What year is it? 2026 draft. Joining me to do it again is Coach Derek of All 22 Films. Derek, how you doing?
Doing good, man. Thanks a whole lot. These are always fun to do. I'm kind of glad the draft is only once a year because there's so much work that goes into
it's an incredible amount of work. It's just an incredible amount.
I don't know what the I don't want to know actually what the return is on how many players you watch or research, and then how many players actually end up on the Ravens team or, you know, in my case, Ravens, Lions, or Seahawks teams that I try to watch a lot of film of. So I don't know what the return on investment is, but I hope people on the other end, listeners and watchers, enjoy it because there's a heck of a lot of work that goes in by everybody who produces draft centric content.
Team-centric content in particular. And I can tell you, neither Derek nor I is probably doing this for the money. And it's a good thing in terms of the return for this kind of thing. But
the ROI be even worse.
Yes.
The ROI be even worse.
For dollars worth. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we move forward. Now, you mentioned we're up to number six, and you had Bud Clark as your number six guy, who was my number eight guy.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have some pretty big alignment here for the second group, and this was not – well, I guess technically this would be the first group, the first five or six, and we didn't plan that, but that's the way it's going to work out. I really like Bud Clark. You know, we talked about him in part one. Been in school for 6 years, but all the production occurred in the last 4 years. I think perhaps I maybe mischaracterized his tackling. I wouldn't put him – anywhere near the same category as Genesis Smith or Jacoby Thomas as far as tackling, Bud Clark I'm talking about, but nonetheless still inconsistent and someone I would not project to be a second-level defender consistently, meaning line up at too high safety, drop down into covering the curl flat or the hook in a buzz or insert cover three. I just feel like Bud Clark's skills are better suited for the back end, a middle-of-the-field free safety, or a too high safety structure. Very good at reading the quarterback. Off man coverage is really the only thing I would trust him in. And even then, I felt like he was very predisposed to getting penalties, which I think you even read the numbers out in part one, kind of lined up.
That one every 57 targets or 57 snaps, I should say, not even targets. So I had a couple guys I liked that you didn't. One was VJ Payne of Kansas State. I think he was off your board, you mentioned. And Michael Tafe as well, who I liked out of Texas. I think he's just a back end smart free safety guy. Payne, there's a lot of things, a lot of ways he could be used, I suppose. But I like both of those guys. I think they're reasonable day three picks. We both agreed, I think, more or less on Jacoby Thomas being a guy that would be a wonderful guy to have near the end of day three.
It's a deep group, in my opinion. It's a deep position group, and some of the names at the end. For you know, your and I's work here is somewhat interchangeable, meaning teams are going to be happy fifth, sixth, seventh round with some of these guys. I don't want to say regardless of who they get, but there is significant talent at the safety position. It's not as deep as the edge class or the tight end group, maybe, but I think it's comparable. I think the edge group here deserves mention the safety group here deserves mention for how many guys in that third, fourth, fifth round range are going to come in and possibly play snaps. You know, now are, you know, Genesis Smith, Jacoby Thomas, are those guys going to play a lot of reps for the top six or eight teams in the NFL? No. You know, they may be like a Dante Trader that I mentioned in the first episode who played a lot of snaps for the Dolphins last year. But nonetheless, still, you're talking about guys picked in a fifth round or even six in some cases are going to play a lot of snaps. I think that speaks to the talent that is out there and the depth and the quality of of said talent.
Yeah. They're guys also most first opportunities in the NFL come due to injury anyway. So Jacoby Thomas, he's the kind of player you don't go out and get somebody else off the street. If Jacoby Thomas looks anything like you hope he'll look like when you draft him, you go ahead and you stick him into your starting lineup when your strong safety say, or your free safety even goes down. In his case, I had one honorable mention that I think is worth mentioning. Maybe you can pick a guy too who's on your list who didn't quite make the top 11, 12, 13, or we haven't talked about yet. But Cole Wisniewski out of Texas Tech is an interesting as hell prospect. I'm just interesting as hell. He's enormous. Let me get to my notes on and make sure I don't get this wrong here. 6'4", 220, ran 4.52 at his pro day, 34.5-inch arms. This would be interesting because 34.5-inch arms, according to that's NFL Draft Buzz, and I looked at Draft Scout, and they list his arms at 31 1/8. I think there's a problem there. So, and he
big guy,
24 in March,
big guy, physical, played at North Dakota State, had to sit out, I think 2024 for injury. He was a linebacker who moved to safety in 23 at North Dakota State and put up 8 interceptions.
Yep.
In 2023. And, you know, some of them, you get that many interceptions. Of course, one or two of them are, you know, tipped balls or whatever, but he puts himself in the right spot. I thought he played well for Texas Tech this last year. Maybe similar to Jacoby Thomas in that the talent level playing in front of him, I mean, Wisniewski here. Mm-hmm. You got Jacob Rodriguez, the inside linebacker, Romello Height, David Bailey, the defensive tackle Hunter, amazing talent playing in front of him at the college level. You know, maybe they shored up. They made it to where he wasn't put in exposed situations. I like the player. I really do like Cole Wisniewski. I can definitely co-sign adding him as an honorable mention. I didn't, even though when I first started to do draft work for this year, I had him as one of my 10 or 12 safeties that I gathered film of. The problem was he didn't play a single snap in 24 and then moved to Texas Tech. Like, well, you know, everybody knows why everybody's going to Texas Tech at this point, right? The billionaire donor. Yeah, the billionaire donor.
No, I did not know that. Okay, so they have billionaire donors who's put a lot of NIL money into the into the team. Are there any caps on that now for NIL money?
No, and it's pretty unbelievable. I mean, some of the young men that are being, you know, offered choices. I could, you know, I'm not going to name names, but I happen to know of one individual who played extremely well this past year in the ACC and was offered a significant amount of money to move, and the school that he was at matched it. So it's just amazing. I'm talking about 7 figures. So, you know, it's serious money that if you invest well, you've put yourself in a great situation to start off in your, even if you don't ever get to the NFL. So those guys are being afforded options that in some cases they just can't turn down. I'm quite sure that Cole Wisniewski was one of them, right? To go from North Dakota State, great football program that is now, you know, joining the FBS, in fact, but is going to play at Texas Tech. I don't think Wisniewski gets drafted. If he does, it's probably 7th round. I had Kamari Ramsey as my 11th guy because I just did not like the 25 film that much. But the 24 film was different because Ramsey wasn't asked to play nickel nearly as much in 24 as he was in 25. That was really due to injuries. He was almost miscast as a nickel DB, if you will. So that was my honorable mention guy. I did have some nickel only guys to add, but they would probably be your corners, right?
They well could be. I want to give you a second, but I want to comment one thing on the Texas Tech thing, because obviously the Texas Tech edge players are fantastic this year, and Bailey is just unbelievable tape. He's played there 2 years now. I guess he played 2 at Auburn before. So I don't know when their donor came in, but
Bailey.
I hope he got paid.
Stanford. Yeah, he had some good film at Stanford too. Yeah, and I think his brother goes. David Bailey's brother, I think, goes to like an Ivy League school. So you're talking about 2 kids. One gets accepted to Stanford, and then one gets accepted to be Harvard.
Bailey finished at Stanford in 3 years too. Yeah. That was the other thing. He's a graduate student. So that's
just amazing.
His degree, and this is a direct quote. Look, I'm quoting this directly from the Texas Tech Media Guide, is in science, technology, and science. Hmm. Don't know what that means.
Sounds like it's supposed to be STEM, what is referred to as STEM now. At the high school level, or maybe a mistype, a typo, excuse me?
It probably is a typo, is what I'm thinking. Texas Tech is in Lubbock, and that's in north central Texas, kind of near the Panhandle, not all the way in the Panhandle, but you'll often hear it referred to on the show, Landman, as the place where most of the Permian Basin engineers go to school. So the guys who end up, you know, in the enormous oil fields of West Texas and supporting football in places like Odessa, are go to Texas Tech typically. And I think that the main actors, I'm forgetting who that is. His son went to Texas Tech. And
one of those guys looks like Kevin Costner, but isn't.
This is the guy from Goliath. And I cannot believe I'm blanking on his name right now, but he's a older guy, three names.
Not Billy Bob Thornton.
Billy Bob Thornton. Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah. I don't watch TV, but that's what I thought. But look, those guys had unbelievable talent at Texas Tech. And as far as Wisniewski goes, I think he's a good player. He kind of reminds me of, there's a backup safety for the Seahawks who got in some this year when they had injuries and played quite well. And then, you know, once everyone was healthy, he's, you know, back to not getting on the field at all, only doing special teams. Wisniewski wouldn't surprise me if he's a guy who can carve out an NFL career because he's obviously got great ball skills. He's willing to come downhill and tackle. I think he's a great inclusion as an honorable mention guy. Did you want me to go over the nickel guys I had or no? Or
yeah, go. You can go and then we'll get to it. We got to kind of push this along.
So kind of an underrated guy, Jaden Kennedy from Oregon, dedicated nickel, very athletic, quick. Probably had the best interception of anyone that I saw this year. I'm trying to remember which game it was against. You have to give me a second. I think we've got him as a safety on our site. So if people want to look it up who are listening, they could either obviously A, look it up on our site, draftsignal.pro, or look up Jaden Kennedy interception versus Washington. He's actually playing safety, but Oregon's whole safety structure with Thieneman was very unique at times. And Kennedy, to me, I think is a guy who gets drafted later, fifth, sixth, seventh, and has the talent to actually get on the field depending on where he goes. He's super gifted, if you ask me. And if you look at that one play against Washington, you're like, wow, this is a great interception.
His overall body of work is fantastic. And he is a slot corner, at least as he's typically listed. But he gave up less than 3 yards per target and had a 39.4 opposition passer rating against, which is slightly better than every pass incomplete.
To your point from part one about, I think we both made the point at separate times, the quality of what's there at safety and corner, you know, combination groups. The play of the nickels star, whatever you want to call it, has been elevated, I think, everywhere. Kyle Lewis from Pittsburgh, I know people talk about him being a linebacker, like watch the film. He's oftentimes playing nickel DB, and unless it's third and eighth, and they have a 3-3 structure where they move him in, and he's a blitzer. Keontae Scott from Miami, those are the nickel-specific guys, along with Tre'Don Stoukes, who played mostly nickel for Arizona, that I think are the most interesting at different parts of the draft. I'm a big fan of Keontae Scott, the playmaking skills, et cetera, coming forward. I don't know that he offers the same coverage down the field as like a Tre'Don Stoukes or a Jaden Kennedy. Neither does Kyle Lewis. I would say Kyle Lewis is in his own bucket with the nickel overhang guys. Keontae Scott, a little bit better coverage guy, but Kyle Lewis's coverage would be, you know, like Will linebacker, if you ask me, if he was going to be on the field at times. I really like Keontae Scott as a football player, but I think Kennedy's coverage and Tre'Don Stoukes is just a different level than theirs.
You know, Kennedy, I appreciate you turning me on to him because I hadn't seen him before, but I mostly ruled out the slot guys. There are a couple guys I just love. Pons, I love his play, so I kept him in.
How can you not? I mean, how can you not?
But the in generally speaking, I mean, the Ravens are not looking for a nickel corner, and they've got, it's one of the places where they actually have pretty significant depth behind a guy who should not be moved to start with. So, I mean, even Keon Martin, I really like. I think that Humphrey, when he moves over there, is fine. And I think that, you know, the Ravens may have other options there as well. I don't think they need to go there. I'm going to jump ahead to my number six, since we're really getting behind here a little bit. And I'll tell you, I know you have him on your list somewhere, at least as an honorable mention, but I have Kamari Ramsey of USC and UCLA before that, 6'02", 204, 47, 40, short-armed, gave up 5.3 yards per target last year, which is fine, but there were a lot of big plays involved, and the opposing quarterback rating was 99.3, kind of played a slot and strong safety hybrid. He is big enough that he can certainly – he's adjacent, I would say, to the star role kind of player. So doesn't quite have the length to do it, but probably ends up being on the back end in the NFL. He's duplicative, I think, of what the Ravens have in a lot of ways, particularly with Hawkins under contract for 2 years, but maybe another guy that they would take in a late round. He's only got three penalties and 997 coverage snaps, which is good. Does not have great ball skills, two interceptions and 11 passes defense and 94 career targets, which is not particularly good for a back end safety. So anyway,
yeah, athletic, tests well, I think like a 4.47 40. I'm looking at our website, you know, off screen. I did an eval of him. So did Jason Smith. I think he's versatile. I think his 2024 film is probably closer to the player that he actually can be than the 25 film. I thought 25 film didn't reflect well. He played a lot of nickel, I think, as a result of injuries to the rest of the secondary. And the only thing to me that I thought he's really good coming downhill when he's in zone. I feel like there's some times when there's man that he's a little less willing to commit to defending a route because he's unsure about what the route actually is. And sometimes I wonder if those guys who move around a lot, nickel DB, middle of the field, free safety, too high structure, if maybe they're being asked to do too many things. And at times we've created a little bit of hesitation in their ability to react. And so I think Kamari Ramsey's got all the athletic talent that's needed to play, you know, somewhere at the NFL level. He looks like a guy to me that if he goes to a consistent defensive structure in the NFL, the Rams, the Seahawks, other teams, hopefully the Ravens in 2026, that he would play well if you saw him get on the field. I think that Ramsey versus a Keon Martin is an interesting battle if you're talking about nickel position only, because I don't think Ramsey is a nickel. I don't. So, you know, the other way to do it, comparing the other nickels to Keon Martin, will be a different conversation. I do like that he comes downhill. He's got really good timing on some of the blitzes. I feel like if you want to get a real true look at how good he can be, you want to look at the 24 film more so than 25. So that's probably why I had him rated lower than you, because I focused on 25.
And I'm cool with that. He did have a really good tackling year in 25. One of the things that's apparent from his tape is it's not always clear to me, particularly with the 24 tape, that he does has the want to for playing downhill. To me, that disqualifies him for the slot position. It makes him free safety only. Where I would see him playing back end for the Ravens.
I'm lower on him, I think, than other people are, which is why I don't have him in my top 10. I did, however, put on my evaluation on the website that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he got drafted in the 89. It's the Bears. Of course, they let go. I can't remember the veteran safety that Kevin Byard, I think. The Dolphins at 90, who, you know, got rid of Minka, or the Seahawks at 96, who let, you know, Kobe Bryant leave. It wouldn't be surprised to me if Kamari Ramsey doesn't survive that run. 89 Bears, 90 Dolphins, 96 Seahawks, even though personally I'm not as huge of a fan of him as other people are.
So I have a fourth round grade on him, and that's a fourth round value would be okay at number 115 for the Ravens. Would you be upset if the Ravens took him there?
No, as long as we've addressed other things prior to that, other situations, other positions of need, excuse me. I mean, I like the player. I recognize that there is value. There's certainly talent. And I'm also partial. I want to make this point a third time that someone who played, I would almost say, a little bit out of position in 2025 for what he's actually going to be at the NFL compared to what Matt Patricia, regardless of what our opinions are of him, what he did with Arvel Reese and Sonny Styles, basically letting those guys play some snaps at inside linebacker and then play some snaps at edge defender to the right or to the left, generally Styles to the left and Reese to the right. He really, Patricia and the staff there, really widened up the possible landing points for those two players and put on film against high-level competition what they're capable of doing. In Kamari Ramsey, we have a guy who kind of had the reverse happen to him in 25. He had really good 24 film, I thought. And then 25 was put in a spot where it's not conducive to displaying his skills. I think if he ends up being a too high safety structure guy for the Rams, the Seahawks, or, you know, someone like that, I think he probably has a pretty good NFL career.
All right. Let's go on to your number five guy, who I think, based on our previous conversation, is also my number five guy.
Another Maryland guy, Zakii Wheatley. I've been a fan of his for years. I think that somewhere along the line, you know, he's made 60 starts, I think 5 seasons at Penn State. Mm-hmm. And he's done a little bit of everything. I imagine or suspect that some teams have actually gone back and looked at the 23 film. That's the last year that Manny Diaz was the defensive coordinator at Penn State. He's now the head coach at Duke. And Manny Diaz is a madman. He's a little bit of Mike McDonald, a little bit of Rex Ryan, a little bit of Brian Flores maybe. There's a lot going on in his defensive structure. And when Zakii Wheatley played for him, I thought Wheatley looked great. He hasn't taken the ball away a ton. I want to say 5, maybe 6 career interceptions. I'm trying to look on my screen now. But no fear at all coming forward. He will tackle. When he played, I think it's Oregon in 25, 10, 11, 12 tackles, something like that. He's 6'3". He doesn't just have great range on the field in coverage. I think of like a heat map. I think his heat map would be pretty dispersed. His ability to get
where this is where targets are not going.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yes. As a deterrent, basically. Yeah. But also he's got great range because of his length. At 6'3", I have no idea about the arms thing, but I think he's a really good football player. I think Zakii Wheatley in the right place next year could play a ton of snaps. I think he's a better player than guys who were drafted 3rd, 4th, 5th round last year and played 600-700 snaps in the NFL as a rookie in 25. I'm huge on Zakii Wheatley. By the way, he's another Maryland guy from Maryland. Spalding, he's actually an Anne Arundel County student if he had not gone to a private school.
So he'll be a guy who probably will go on day 2, would be my guess. If it doesn't happen, if he somehow lasted into the 4th round, I think he'd be a value for the Ravens at that point. Fantastic year last year with 3.6 yards per target. And it's interesting, you mentioned Diaz, the previous coordinator there. He had a prior in college, Zakii Wheatley had allowed 9.7 yards per target prior to this last year. So it's interesting. I wonder if there's some madman stuff going on in multiple directions. I didn't inspect it closely to go previous to 25. Did have a good year in terms of a lot of coverage metrics that I won't get into. Not a great ball hawk for his career. 6 interceptions and 6 PDs is not terrible total ball production, but that's on 69 career targets, and that's just okay for a draftable safety. It's a little bit below the line, honestly. No penalties in 1,231 career coverage snaps. Now, they do call the game tighter at the NFL level, but still, that's very impressive. And whenever I see that, I know a guy who at least probably trusts his makeup speed, trusts to correct a bad situation with his feet as opposed to with his hands.
Yeah, my player comp for him was Kirby Joseph, and that's high. That's very complimentary because I think Kirby Joseph, you know, pre-injury, look at the stats, the interceptions, the tackles, 80 tackles a year, and an incredible number of interceptions. His path or his projection was, you know, was really as good as anyone in the history of the NFL, along with, you know, other than Ed Reed, if he continued at that same rate. I like Zakii Wheatley a lot. I think that he could play free safety, middle of the field free safety, and be fine. I suspect he will thrive in a more multiple system that allows him to be used as a blitzer sometimes. He's got a hair trigger on run plays. If he sees run, he's downhill now, he's gone. And he tackles well, at least to what I've seen on film. This is what I enjoy about this show with you, is that I don't look at those things at all. And so it seems to me, more often than not, if I say someone's not, well, Genesis Smith, everyone can see it, he's not a good tackler. Yeah. But certain guys, that there's some problems there, that your numbers generally illustrate that. So what does it show on Zakii Wheatley?
13.8% missed tackle rate is close to the median. I think it was 14.3, and the stops per missed tackles were 2.3, which is a little bit better. So, you know, that's a positive pair of combinations. That said, he's a draftable player. He should be better than the median in both cases. So
a big fan of his game and what he's done over the course of his career. And look, it must be said, the talent that's in this draft from Maryland is insane. What's available here. There's true overrepresentation from a quality standpoint. You've got the Derek Moore that played at Michigan. A lot of it is St. Francis. I know, I understand that, but there's still good talent outside of that. Denai Dennis Sutton, you know, went to Owens Mills at McDonough. Zakii Wheatley, Mansour Delane. So many guys are from the Maryland. Jalen Husky, who I've mentioned a little bit outside of the Baltimore, you know, metropolitan area, but there's a lot of talent from Maryland that's going to be drafted and make a lot of money in this draft. Well, they've already made their money from college in more ways than one.
All right. So we're up to your number four guy. I think we have the same number four guy too, but go ahead and introduce us to him.
So AJ Halsey, LSU, the differential, if you go back and look at the evaluations of him on certain websites, those that date their evals and read what was written to him about him before 2025 versus during and after, it's very interesting. And I kind of see the same progression. First of all, he's got great eye discipline. He's able to adapt one play to the next, but he's also got the ability to adapt during the play. There's a PD. I'm not sure if we have it on our site. Obviously, I'm, you know, not shamelessly promoting the website that we've done a shit ton of work on. There's a play. I don't know if we have it on our site that he makes. I'm glancing real quick. Yeah, it's against Texas A&M as the quarterback scrambles. And I know you guys are just listening, but you're more than welcome to look it up. AJ Halsey, Texas A&M highlight, or you can go to our website, draftsignal.pro, and check it out, where he adjusts during the play and kind of leaves a receiver to cover and goes over against a tight end and makes just a diving PD. He's super aware, if you ask me. Cover three buzz when he's dropping down to the hash, kind of either of the hashes. He's got great ability to have eyes on the quarterback and deal with routes compared to like a Bud Clark or obviously a Genesis Smith or Jacoby Thomas. Those guys I don't think will be asked to drop down to the second level from a too high safety structure pre-snap drop down and be effective. I feel like AJ Halsey is. And then obviously he's a big hitter. He tackles well and he's very versatile. I think he's smooth and athletic. He ran a 4.5 40, so this, you know, I know it's not great. He's only 22 years old. My player comp for him was C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
That's high praise. I mean, he certainly had some time. He bounced around a little bit this year. He was on the Ravens practice squad briefly, wasn't he?
Played fantastic for the Bears this year. C.J. Gardner-Johnson was electric for them, but usually in odd number of years he plays great, in even number of years he doesn't. So who knows? You know, when I do a player comp, I usually try to high-end it intentionally. I usually try to high-end it and say, this is what I think the guy could be in the right situation. Played boundary side safety a lot in LSU's structure. Occasionally ended up matched up with tight ends. I don't think that's his relative strength. I think he's great in zone coverage. Really good as a middle-of-the-field free safety as well. To me, doesn't look like a guy that's going to play any nickel at all. And I could be really wrong there. I just don't see him as a guy who's going to cover people man-to-man.
All right. Exceptional ball skills. The Ravens, I think, really love this guy. They brought him in for a top 30 visit. 10 interceptions and 19 passes defense. Not in 112 targets. That's to go with 112 targets. It's very possible to make an interception on a ball that is not your target. So you kind of get a advantage there. Just want to explain that for people. But 0.26 is an outstanding number for a free safety. He's a big, thick guy. You know, weighs 215 pounds. I think he denies space and zone pretty effectively. He takes it away from the quarterback's eyes, and that may be part of what you're talking about. We do that. I think
at either level, second or third level, we're totally in alignment there. He denies those opportunities to even be targeted, and so I think that's one of the things that sometimes I think gets missed is the guy who's in great position. It, in effect, like in basketball, it's maybe ball denial, you know, denying the great shooter or scorer the opportunity to even get the ball here. You know, he's not targeted because he's in great position. So go on. I'm totally in alignment with all that.
Triggers downhill very well. I think we already said that he should be a better block shedder than he is. He's a big guy. One of the problems is he's got kind of short arms, so that's going to be a problem. He's under 31 inches there. It's not terribly short. I mean, there's safeties with 29 inch arms in this draft, so it's not like he's the shortest of the short for me. He's another split fielder free safety guy for the Ravens. If he came here, he would be very expensive in terms of draft capital. I'm really interested as to why the Ravens brought him in for a top 30 visit, because it just does not seem to fit a guy that they can draft. But they do have a few in, probably for some fakery, maybe for favors occasionally.
Depends on how far you want to go down that rabbit hole, because you know there's some. opportunities with some of the film to project. For example, I actually have for one of my notes, I'll read it out. Versatile, adaptable, can read and react one snap to the next, running back slash tight end slash receiver. And so what I mean by that is there's two plays in a game, I can't remember exactly who it's against, where it's consecutive plays, and I watch him and the Will linebacker and the edge defender to the boundary react in combination to the running back release. And then the very next play, it appears to me as if they're doing the same thing, but you get two different reactions from the running back. And so to me, I get the end zone angle. I feel like those guys are looking at the running back and reacting to him because it's all at the same instant, all three of their reactions. One time the running back flares to the flats and Halsey flies down into the boundary. And the Ravens actually do, they used to do this, I should say, under McDonald. They would play this coverage where two or three guys are reading the running back and the coverage, the way that it works out post-snap, the location of the defensive players, let's do it that way, is all determined by the release of the running back into the boundary, independent of the receivers that are lined up to the field. And so I saw this reaction from Halsey flying down, and I didn't think it was predetermined because the very next snap, the running back released to the field, and Halsey's eyes, well, you guys can't see this, but Ken can, Halsey's eyes immediately went, okay, directly forward, 12.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S., BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session, based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Clock over here, 9:30, looking for number three from the other side. I just see a high-level recognition from him, high-level awareness. And so just shot in the dark here. Maybe some of the visits are to, hey, what is this coverage? Explain this coverage to us. Maybe that's a part of it.
That's an interesting idea.
Explain this coverage to us. What are you guys calling this? Because we do this, or we used to, under McDonald. We do this, or we, you know, what? Here's what we call it, or what do you call it? How are you guys reading it? Who's making the call to determine that? So who knows? You know, I wouldn't think they'd want to waste somebody's time for only that, but I'm offering that that could be one of the four or five reasons that they bring somebody in, even though we're not using 14 or 45 for A.J. Halsey.
Well, and it won't be 14, that's for sure. But I don't think we'll use 45 or 80. I don't see any way where he's at the intersection of need and value streets at either of those picks. And exactly. So that means, you know, the Ravens hope to get him in round four if everybody else passes up on him. And no way. I mean, so it's a strange top 30 visit.
No way.
It's an interesting, you know, call there. Yeah.
Just a part of it, you know, part of it.
All right. I'll tell you what. We'll continue on. The number three guy, our guy's the same. You introduce him. Go ahead, and I'll have comments.
I mean, first of all, you have to mention two things about Emmanuel McNeer Warren. That number one, he's forces fumbles like crazy. It's uncanny. 9 of them, I think, in 48 games. The one against, I think it's Kentucky this year, week one or week two. The tight end is running downfield. It happens like 22 yards downfield. Most, if you tracked forced fumbles, you know, where do most of them occur? In the box, right? Where the running backs have the ball, or maybe outside on the perimeter. Yeah. You've got to use the heat map reference again, that fumble, that forced fumble was an outlier where it occurred. And to me, Emmanuel McNeil Warren is like the, I'll use another combat sports analogy. He's like Tommy Hearns. He's got the touch of death. You know, if he touches the football, it's coming out. And that's just based on film. You know, I've seen 6 of them on film. They didn't all 6 occur this year. Everybody's impressed with the RAS scores. I think it was like a 9-1 or 9-2. He only had a 4.52 40, but he looks faster on film. It has to be said also, Toledo's defense was exceptional. Mm-hmm. They were third in FBS at 13.3 points per game allowed. To compare him to Amanwari, it's favorable. He's a better tackler on film that I saw than Amanwari was his last year of college at South Carolina.
Well, I mean, the things about Amanwari that were special were not what he already knew in his polish at the safety position. He was an unpolished player who had a 38 passer rating against, or 38 or 34, whatever it was last year. That was what was so, 2 years ago, I guess now, but that was what was so special about him coming into the draft, is he didn't know how to play the position and he's that good. What the hell is going to happen when he figures it out? You know, and yep. In fact, they just used him at a completely different position, honestly.
It's a boundary side safety his last year at South Carolina, nickel/dime linebacker in Seattle. Yeah. Manuel McNeil Warren, he's a laser coming downhill. He's a high volume tackler for the opportunities that are there. I forget who it was that we referred to earlier. Kind of, I don't think we said hung around, but someone didn't seem pressed to get involved. That's not McNeil Warren. McNeil Warren is there to make contact. I do think he's somewhat reliant on seeing the quarterback and knowing how to react. I suspect there's less pattern reading going on for him than some of these other guys that play in the SEC or Zakee Wheatley, meaning there's less reading the routes and reacting, moving 2 or 3 yards more towards the sideline or 2 or 3 yards more towards the middle of the field, depending on the routes that are occurring. I think there's a little bit more, ruggedness or roughness to his reactions. But Toledo is a high-level defense. I mean, again, go watch some of the film. Not you, but anyone. He's a better tackler than Nick Amanwari was his senior year in college as well. I can see the comparisons, even though the athletic testing is different. I know Amanwari, I think, was bigger. And also, obviously, faster, running like a 4.38 compared to a 4.52. Very good player. Nothing would surprise me for McNeil Warren in this draft. It wouldn't surprise me if someone takes him at the end of the first round.
Yeah, the only thing that would surprise me is if they really didn't try and make him a Hamilton, James, Amanwari type player, where they use him in that role. I think that's where he's destined to play in the NFL. And I think the things that they talk about in a lot of scouting is overcommitment to the football and whatnot. I mean, there's such a high payoff for that stuff. It's like people talking about Ed Reed's gambling. You know, go cry in your coffee somewhere else about Ed Reed's gambling. Ed Reed, Marcus Peters, they knew how to gamble like no one else who's ever played the game. And the fact that they're playing with big chips a lot of the time, and there can be the game on the line, or there can be a touchdown versus a pick six on the line. I trust them to make 100%. That decision, you know, all the way. And McNeil Warren is a guy who the things that he's not doing perfectly in terms of overcommitting downhill will get coached up and change some. And I hope it doesn't affect any of the things he does in terms of second man of the ball skills. I personally believe that most of the forced fumbles occur on the perimeter. Now, Marlon Humphrey had that real outlier lead year, and Tillman did too, where they were getting them after the catch a lot and getting some punch outs at that point. But a lot of second man skills, second man fumbles, I think, occur as runners are going to the outside on a play as opposed to between the tackles. I'm not saying they don't happen there. I just don't think it happens quite as often. I think they're struggling often, and they lose track often of a man behind them.
Of course. Absolutely. I think it's been like 2 years. You may remember it, but a lot of other people would not. I've mentioned this. I would highly suggest people go search for Kirby Smart /or Bill Belichick talking about forced fumbles and the drills that they do. Kirby Smart references a study that Bill Belichick that's how long ago this came out. Bill Belichick was still with the Patriots, but it's Kirby Smart talking about research that Bill Belichick and the Patriots had done. And it's something like 70% of fumbles occur. The way that we would explain it to kids is the guy who you juke, that's not the guy that causes the fumble. It's you're juking player A. Player B, who's in your periphery, may not be the guy that forces the fumble. It's generally player C, who's you're totally unaware of. Guess what? There's 9 other guys on the field, dude. Where do you think they're running? You have the football. So anyway, Kirby Smart talking about what you just said, which is who forces the fumbles. McNeil Warren, I think what's interesting for me about some to say that he overcommits to the football, I would guess against the run or play action, is I actually think his technique, his stance is pretty poor at times. And he's actually sometimes a step slow because he's, but that could be related to this. He's a high level pre-snap communicator. He's always, you know, you guys listening can't see this, but Ken can. He's always one of those guys who's putting his mouthpiece in at the last second because he's communicating to the guys near to him and even the inside linebackers. I think there's evidence that Emmanuel McNeil Warren is an extremely intelligent player for the system that he played in at Toledo. I suspect that, I agree with you, he'll probably be moved to the nickel star, whatever you want to call it, which would mean alignment to the field, different than being a boundary side safety. Still stressed, don't get me wrong, but you're more protected with a safety behind you and a corner behind you. And right. I offer that actually could accentuate and accelerate the impact that an Emmanuel McNeil Warren could have. If you know that there's some protection behind you, you're a little bit more willing risks. To come downhill. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you call it risk, but so other people may refer to it as calculated risk.
It's risks you're getting paid for. I'm an actuary. So this is what I look for. You walk through life looking for risks you can get paid for, literally.
That's right. I would call it a read, a read and a reaction. And to me, if put in those situations where he could, take risks or have definitive reads and be used as a blitzer at times, super talented guy. I had him at, where are we at? We're at three, right?
Three or four. Yeah. Three. Okay.
We got the same five, right? Five. And I mean, I just think it's illustrative of what's there in this draft and that some people, there's not more than one quarterback or, whatever, one or two, complaints about edge defender and arm length and all those things. Fine. Okay. Those are real issues. I get it. There's great depth at the safety position. There is great depth at the edge defender position, and tight end is unbelievable. The value you're going to be able to get in the fourth or fifth round. Yeah. So Emmanuel McNeil Warren in other drafts, if he went to Alabama or Georgia last year, where does he get picked right now? I think he's a top 18 pick.
Well, with Quinyon Mitchell going in the first round, I don't think there'll be a problem with that for McNeil Warren either. So, that is one. I had context questions with Mitchell that I dropped him on my board for it, but, he proved it. So let's move on to number two. Go ahead and start us off again here. I'm sure I'll have lots of comments to make about an unbelievable season that he had.
Yeah. I mean, you told me Thieneman, the film was fun to watch, even though at times, I just had to rewatch plays. I'm like, this is just very, some people will say and characterize it as Thieneman was asked to do things in 2025 at Oregon that he will not be asked to do at the NFL level. I call it nickel Mike. I don't know what other people refer to it as. They're taking one of the inside linebackers and widening him up to the field. And in essence, the inside linebacker is becoming the nickel that we just talked about with Emmanuel McNeil Warren or Kyle Hamilton or Nick Emmanuel. And Thieneman's like the middle safety, and they're dropping him down to like 8 yards, sometimes seven. And he's fitting the run as if he's an inside linebacker. We're talking about safeties. To me, it should be looked at from the perspective of a strength. What they were trying to do, in my opinion, was put him on the midline, the imaginary line that goes through the quarterback and the center's body, on every snap. And goes behind the backfield and through the defensive secondary. They were trying to get Thieneman on or as close to that midline as possible so that he could react to his left and to his right versus being a dedicated nickel to the field. You're not going to get the plays to the boundary. You can kind of avoid those players. I think it's, when you look at the ball skills that were demonstrated, the interception against Penn State this year in overtime to finish the game, not a great throw by Aller. Six interceptions as a freshman at Purdue. I think Thieneman is an extremely interesting talent, and I'm not of the mode to decry him or run him down because of what Oregon did with him, because he possesses that skill. My suspicion is they could have dropped him down to a nickel, and he would have played great. He would have looked like who's the guy for the Eagles that they want to turn into the he played Iowa.
DeJean.
Yeah, Cooper. I mean, to me, if they dropped him down to nickel with his athleticism and ball skills, he probably would have had a pick six, two or three interceptions. I mean, I thought Oregon was making tactical choices because of the skills and talent that Thieneman had. I didn't look at it as a limiting factor at all. I just think it's illustrative of the point that the guy does everything well.
Yeah, outstanding testing. I mean, great athletic profile. The jumps, the speed, they're absurd for a safety. He hasn't had any significant injuries in 3 years. He'll be 22 in August, so he's one of the younger players. It's very important every year is how young these guys are. And you do have some older guys in the safety group, and we've kind of had to talk about their age a little bit. And in some cases, you know, I think there is a real question of dominating at an older age and having a great year at 23 and a half or even 24 against younger men. That is a real question. But it's not that's not part of the problem for Thieneman, and he's got 22 plays on the football and 68 career targets. That's 32% of the time, or 32% ratio, we'll call it. 8 interceptions and 14 passes defense. So it's not like one interception and 23 passes defense or something. He really only had 2 bad plays in 2025, as I saw it. He overran coverage of Eugene Hilton. This was in the Wisconsin game. It was deep middle. That Eugene Hilton, by the way, is the son of Ty Hilton, who used to play for the Colts years back, and he slipped on the play, allowed a 42-yard play. That was in the fourth quarter, but he was in his hip pocket the whole way. So even though it was a bad play, he ended up slipping. It was a good play for 85% of it. You know, it's one of those things that just missed. And then, you know, he was late getting over on the 35-yard touchdown from Allen to Ross against Penn State. That was a 35+0. So the ball was caught in the end zone is the point.
Yeah.
He would have been the back end of that bracket. The coverage was trailing from the corner and he was beaten a little bit and he was too late getting over.
I thought he was slow. I had that one on. Yeah. I thought he was slow to that. Excuse me. Certainly not slow on the field generally. I didn't see the Wisconsin one, but as far as Thieneman goes, like, he's a guy that I could see succeeding. I mean, he's obviously a first round pick. I mean, I saw a mock the other day that was like, there's going to be 2 safeties taken. I was like, oh,
top 10.
that makes sense. No, I said there's going to be 2 safeties taken in the first round. I had Downs and McNeil Warren. I was like, man, I just don't see how, you know, 32 NFL front offices look at that guy and don't say, all right, we want him. The ball skills, the ratio, you utilize the word ratio instead of percentage. And I think that's accurate because at least 2 of the plays from his time at Purdue, He's not targeted. It's like the X receiver way over there. He's not on the other side of the field, but he's in the middle of the field almost and goes over there, gets an interception one time, another time gets a PD. So some of those times he's not even targeted. He's still making a play. I think he's a fantastic player. He's a lot of fun to watch. Again, you know, I think it's illustrative of the talent that is there. It's not going to be for the Ravens. You know, Thieneman obviously won't be for the Ravens at 14, but worthy of discussion and focus on how he plays and what they asked him to do. And this is like the 4th guy that I've said this for, or that I have this in my notes. I'm less impressed with his man coverage. I would not think that that's what he majors in, but even guys in the NFL who aren't man coverage guys, occasionally they're asked to do it and they succeed because they, you know, they understand the situation and the type of route they're going to be. Super intelligent, super athletic, great football player. A lot of fun to watch.
So sometimes it's even depressing talking about some of these players because you know the Ravens won't end up with them. That's certainly the case of our number one guy as well, Caleb Downs from Ohio State. Won't be 22 until December. And, you know, there's a whole lot of really average things about him. He's 6 feet, 206, 445, 40, wasn't even measured at the combine for that. And others, right. So all kinds of questions about that. 30¼-inch arms. And yet his set of awards is as long as your arm. You know, the Thorpe Award, the Lott Award. He was a Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, the Big Ten Defensive Back of the Year, 2 first-team All-Americans, you know.
Yeah.
And 4.4 yards per target as a senior. There's virtually no part of his game that's anything but exceptional.
Right.
But I would say the one thing is his ball skills, his actual number of plays on the football is not as high as I expected it to be. And he's in there around 16%, 15-16%. Career where you know we just mentioned Thieneman's at 32%, so it's a little surprising, but I think that he's a guy who is destined to be a great player somewhere in the NFL. I wouldn't even put a cap on what position he has to play.
Right. Yeah, NFL bloodlines. Dre Bly is his uncle. You know, they play with the Rams. I think a couple of other NFL franchises. His dad played in the NFL. Josh Downs is his brother, mm-hmm. you know, the receiver. They're similar. Actually, Josh Downs, I think, is a little bit smaller. Look, he's the versatility. It's all there, right? He played the two high safety structure, played some middle of the field free safety, played nickel. I think he actually played some will linebacker at times. But when you have Arville Reese and you have Sonny Styles, and the third inside linebacker there isn't bad either. I think it's number 26 or 28. I can't remember his name. He's not bad either. So you didn't need Downs as a will linebacker. So, you know, if they had a weakness there, they probably would have put him there. He's a spectacular. His reads are almost too quick at times. I'm there's some times where I watch the play and I'm like, I think he knew the play. And when you say know the play, we're not talking about a Michigan thing, no. Right? Where you actually know the play. What I mean is the formation, the personnel. Excuse me, the personnel, the formation situation. Okay, I'm reading the tight end here. If the tight end does this, yep. It's this play, I'm going now. I've seen three or four times, maybe more, and I only watched six games, where he reacts so quickly, the quarterback doesn't throw it to where Downs is going, but someone else ends up being open because other guys aren't recognizing that quick. It's almost like a hole was vacated too soon because everyone else doesn't have his superb instant ability to react, if that makes sense.
This phenomenon, by the way, happens a fair amount. Not a lot, not a ton, but it happens a fair amount in camp by some of the great players. Because you practice against the same guys, you know their formations, you know a lot of your own playbook from watching it from the sidelines on Sunday or from the rest of the week playing against it. And you will occasionally see a player like Terrell Suggs just figure out the play ahead of time, come up with some method to beat him that has him completely in the wrong place at exactly the right time and make a play on it. I saw one of those a few years ago. We had kind of a peekaboo interception of Joe Flacco in camp it's like what you're describing with Downs in terms of a guy who just he knows what's coming based on the formation. They asked Mark Andrews about that afterwards. He goes, he's just a great football player. I can't figure it out because it must have been Dennis Pitta because it was during the Suggs era. Because he said, we haven't run that play all camp. And he still knew it was coming.
Yeah, he's you know, you can perceive, that he's got experience, not just high level at Ohio State, but there's some natural background with high level teaching and instruction and exposure to the game. I mean, what an advantage to have an uncle. I think Dre Bly's uncle, who played in the NFL, is a college football coach and was a high level recruiter, I think, as well. I think he was at North Carolina for a while. As a resource to talk to about, you know, coverages. His dad, I think, was a running back in the NFL. I might be wrong. I don't think his dad played more than 3 or 4 years, but that's about the average career, you know, anyway. And then his brother is Josh Downs. I mean, talking about NFL level concepts is probably at the Thanksgiving dinner table. I mean, it's just a different level. I'm a huge fan of Caleb Downs. I mean, the preparation, the reactions, there's some missed tackles there. I'm not going to say that all of them are due to this, but I've seen him show up in places not just sooner than he should be, but almost where he shouldn't be, like a gap that he shouldn't be, you know? And so he is, and there's times watching the film, you know, great talent. You got Caden McDonald, the defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. Caden Curry, the edge defender. I know he's going to be a late round pick, still a high level guy, 11 sacks this year. Styles, Arville Reese, Davison, Igbinosun, I think I said the name correctly, the outside corner, boundary corner. A ton of talent there. To me, Caleb Downs could have played at Toledo or Maryland, and he'd still be a top 15 pick. It's just maybe I'm wrong there. Maybe he gets credit for the Ohio State thing and the June. You know, but if you remove the national championship run they made in 24, go look at his freshman film at Alabama. There's 10 or 12 plays that show up there, and you're like, how is that a freshman that's doing that? The understanding, the preparation, it's all there. I hope the ACL stuff isn't true. I don't want to say I don't care. I hope it's not true so we get to see how effective he can be as a nickel. A too high safety structure. I think he's pretty good as a blitzer. I think relatively man coverage and use as a blitzer would be the relative weakness, if that's the right term. I don't know that he has a weakness other than the measurables physically, like you said.
Well, this is going to be a great draft night. And one of the really interesting things to see is Caleb Downs still sticking the top 13 before the Ravens. So like the worst possible situation is he's still available at 14 and it's because of an injury where nobody really wants him. And now the Ravens they can't trade the rights to Downs the way they traded the rights to Derwin James for full value. But they could, potentially, if Downs goes in the top 13, it might mean that a tackle drops to them and not, maybe Yanni and maybe Fano are both gone earlier and Freeling is the guy who is potentially there. The Ravens might want to trade that pick. The Ravens might want to move down and it might be a really good opportunity. But, I look at this as a draft and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this too, where they're going to get to number 8. And I think there's going to be 7 guys on the board that I'm really thrilled about getting.
100%. I think as James Ogden posted the same thing maybe 4 or 5 days ago on Twitter, and totally agree. I forget where I was or who I was participating with. Something along the lines of, what if the board is dry at 14? And I was like, I had to maintain my poker face because I thought that's not going to happen. You know, if Caleb Downs and Reuben Bain and Mwaga and the whole injury thing or whatever that's come out today, if they're all there at 14, I mean, can't go wrong. Like, let me rephrase. Not that you can't go wrong. You have a lot of high level options there. And to your point, I just think that 14 is a huge blessing. The trade back options would be a huge blessing as well. But the talent that's going to be there at 14 is going to be extremely high level and difficult to walk away from. Somebody's got to get taken with the top 13 picks, right? There's this dynamic that's happening now. Oh, this guy's going to drop. This guy's going to drop. Well, who the hell is going to get taken? Some 13 guys are going to get selected, right?
Right.
I think the 14th guy is going to be a great option for this Ravens team, regardless of position. And I'm quite negative about the Ravens the last couple of years, more so in 2024 than others were. I get it, but I'm super optimistic about what we can do with this draft starting at 14. No chance we trade up. But, if we did trade back with the Vikings, I think are at 18, right? I would hesitate to trade back behind the Steelers because they're at 21, I think. And it's just something about in my brain mentally that's like, I wouldn't want the Steelers to get someone at 21, if that's true, if they are at 21. And
have us always asking the question forever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. So that's just a loser mentality on my part. If there's value is there to trade back to 22, 23, then I think the Ravens will do it. I think the phone's going to ring. I really do. I think the phone's going to ring either after pick 12 or after pick 13. The reason why I say 12 is somewhat similar to what you just described after, I think you said the first 8 picks. That there's 7 great players left on the board. After pick 12, if there's 3 great players still on the board or 3 players that other teams see tremendous value of, I think the phone's going to ring after pick 12 when the math work is working in our favor already and we don't have to wait for the phone to ring after pick 13, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could make sense. I think one of the other problems is that there's not a lot of differentiation between, say, the 8th and the 18th player. And then, I mean, they're good and they're at a level that's as high overall as in other past drafts, but that they're people who are at 18 and saying, you know what? I think there's 5 guys I still like here. I don't see any reason to trade up. So that could be the other side of that coin, unfortunately, is that this may not be a great year for that. And then the Ravens, some years you just have to take less to move back. The classic example is of Mike Mayock taking Cleland Farrell at number 4. And he said, I tried to trade back. And my answer to that is, how the hell hard did you try? Look, you could have picked up 1,000 JJ points or something like that for trading back into number 15 and you'd have still had him. And what if you had to take 700 instead? Would that have been weakness or something you'd have shown? Right.
Trading back from 4 is a different thing than trading back from 14. You're operating from a severe position of strength, in my opinion. The only caveat that I could offer about the relative strength of the players from 8 to 18 being so similar would be positional the position being chopped down or basically cut. So like, for example, I happen to know this, that the Lions are in on tackles. Clearly, you know, they released their left tackle, Taylor Decker, saved $21 million. If Proctor and Freeling and Fano go off the board, excuse me, let me rephrase. If two of those guys go off the board and pick 13 is coming up and one of them is remaining, I don't think Proctor's going off the board that early. About. I don't even think he should. My evaluation of him is different than others. Having said that, for the Lions, the math might be such that if there's one tackle available that they like at 13, then they may want to move up. They don't have the draft capital to actually make that work. They don't have a third round pick. So Brad Holmes can't trade it away, which he does pretty much every year.
Two for a three? I mean, you still got multiple picks.
Yeah, could be. Right, exactly. But point being, I only have knowledge of that because I have, you know, some awareness of the Lions roster configuration and what their needs are. I could see it happening, even though I agree with you that the relative strength of those guys in that range, you know, tends to flatline somewhat.
All right, Coach. Just great having this discussion with you. I appreciate it. This is, you know, for all the work that it is, and I spent all day for basically about 3 weeks just working on the draft and finalizing these rankings, getting a note schedule. I know you spend at least that much time on it, and you've got a full time job. There you go. So anyway, a tough it's a labor of love certainly here, and I really appreciate all the work you do and the high level conversation. Tell folks about your website and where they can find your work.
Yeah, we myself and Jake Hallett and a handful of other people were blessed by a lady named Jen in our Ravens Discord, and she helped us program and code the website. She's going to be upset at me again for thanking her, but that's okay. It won't be the first time that someone's upset with me. In this case, I think it's a positive reason. She basically changed the course of my workload for about 6 weeks because when I saw what I consider to be elegant and professional production that she had created in about 48 to 72 hours, I immediately said to myself, all right, I didn't say this to her, I didn't verbalize it. I said to myself, I'm going to drop everything because this quality of work that she's presented to me as a, what do you call it when something's like preliminary?
Prototype.
A prototype. This prototype that she's presented is so amazing. I want to do her work justice. And so my own work on my YouTube channel is really, really gone by the wayside because of the focus being on the website. And we intend to do it even bigger next year if we are blessed enough to do so. We want to get a mock draft simulator on there, which we didn't have this year. And, you know, we want it to be something that we start to work on in the summer. And I've just been very blown away by 13 or 14 people providing work, bringing me on their channel to promote the website. I'm not making a dime off of it. It's not revenue generating at all, but it's a heck of a lot of fun. And it would not have occurred at all if it weren't for the work of a lot of people. But Jen really was at the forefront of it. And so even though, like I said, I know she's going to be upset about it, I wanted to make sure that I credited her with that one more time.
All right. Well, appreciate you, Jen, and I appreciate you, Coach. Other folks out there, hit me up if you have an idea for a show, a pre-draft, draft strategy show, Raven-centric draft element you want to talk about, anything else. Got a couple of open days that can still be plugged in for that kind of stuff. And also, as always, use hashtag film study mailbag if you have a question you'd like me to get into in a 1 to 3 minute video that I'll just talk or explain something, or in a appropriate show I'll add the question to, whether that's Friday morning GM or another. Coach, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate it, man. Looking forward to next year and looking forward to, you know, reacting to this draft. We've got a lot of opportunity here to improve the roster, and I do trust this front office is going to be able to get that done.
All right. Hopefully we'll see you at some point on draft night. And other folks out there, we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.